thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Yeah, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm here with Will T. Ray Jeezy. What's good, bruh?
I'm good. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter, man. You know what I mean? It's a beautiful time, man.
I actually did good, pretty good as far as that goes too for Easter, so I'm excited. I'm excited about how well I did.
Say what?
I said I'm excited for how well I did, you know, as far as food goes, my diet.
I don't know what's going on right now. I have no idea what's going on right now.
Will T want to do a singing intro, aka The Weeknd.
I don't know what that is, man. I have no
come over.
Do not be loud in my ear.
What's up, fellas? How y'all doing?
Welcome.
Welcome, bro. We doing good, man. I'm again, you listen to the Urban Sports Saint Will T. Ray Jeezy. You see, I've been practicing, right?
Didn't cue the mic.
What mic?
Yours, until you came in singing.
I know, right? You know, look, I practice. I'm practice makes perfect, man.
I didn't go off of the
Ice Willie, whatever.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
You don't like Ice Will T?
Nah, man. I hate it.
We done with that, man.
That era is over.
It is over, man. It was a beautiful era, though, man.
Nah, not really.
You know, it's okay. Like I told Will T last week, you know, I didn't like Walk a Flock of Flame, so that thing was like the evilest name ever.
What's going on? What did I miss? Ray Jeezy still exists, though.
Yeah, you don't like Ray Jeezy?
I don't care. It doesn't bother
Thank you. I appreciate
that. Or T from Silver Spring?
No longer for Silver
what
Spring.
What does that mean? You got to tell the people what that's all about.
Nah, I'm not going to put his business out there.
I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
I'll tell you off when we go to commercial break.
Hey, Will T.
Let's get into our tradition of pregame.
We will have Ed Frankovic from WNST Capitals Insider 2 discuss the Washington Capitals playoffs. The Caps are down to the Toronto Maple Leafs 2-1 at 8:20. We'll discuss the Washington Wizards Atlanta Hawks series. Wizards are up 1-0 at 8:30, the NBA playoffs. Finally, we'll discuss Phil Jackson's comments about Carmelo Anthony. But right now, we have Ed Frankovic from WNST to talk about, you know, the Capitals, Toronto, Raptors, Toronto Maple Leafs series. Hey, Ed, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, my friends, all things considered. It's not where we thought it would be, but still got a chance. Got to get it together.
Yeah, I thought we would be up at least, you know, well, 2-1. Honestly, I thought we'd be 3-0, but obviously that didn't happen. So, but anyway, let's get into it. Honestly, why are the Capitals down 2-1 to the Maple Leafs?
Well, I think it's they've been getting outworked. I think that's the first thing is they have not matched the energy and the work ethic of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I think, at least not in the first two games. Now, I felt like in game three, their work ethic was up, at least for the first 30 minutes, but I didn't think like they played smart. I think one of the things they're not doing right now is they're not trusting their teammates. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of guys are trying to do too much individually. And case in point is that third goal the Maple Leafs scored in game three. The Capitals are up 3-2. And, you know, the Leafs come back 2-1-4. There's been a lot of talk about the Leafs speed, I really don't think it's speed because if you look at two of the four goals last night, last night in game three were speed goals. I mean, that third goal that I'm talking about, they come up the ice on a 2-on-4. The Caps are in perfect position, you know, to take over the play and what the Leafs are doing a better job of than the Capitals is getting the puck deep. And Zach Hyman for the Leafs puts the puck deep. And what happens is two Capitals defensemen go after him. I mean, Brooks Orpik had Hyman, and Austin Matthews is coming up the ice late. And for some reason, Shattenkirk came in too, and that leaves Matthews open behind the net. And Lars Eller then makes the cardinal sin. If two guys are behind the net, you're supposed to stay in front and cover the front of the net. Same thing with Andre Burakovsky. Both those guys go behind the net. And there's William Nylander sitting there all alone. Holtby makes an unbelievable save on the first one, but he's hung out to dry, and the rebound goes in. That's a perfect case of not trusting your teammates, of trying to do too much by yourself. And I think that is a big thing that's getting them in trouble, especially defensively. And that's why the team who won the Jennings Trophy this year has given up, 11 goals in three games.
So there's a lot of talk going around that, you know, obviously when you think about your best player in any sport, you want them on the court or on the football field. In this case, the ice at all times. Ovechkin logs 15 minutes of ice time. How does that happen?
That can't happen. And Coach Trout today said that won't happen again. I do not know how that happened. I think part of it was he's trying to roll four lines, and I get that, but I don't like that. I really think that he has to dictate the matchups to Mike Babcock. And the way I dictate the matchups is my best line is Nicklas Backstrom, TJ Oshie, and Alex Ovechkin. They've scored the first two goals of the game. I've got to keep them out there. It's a matchup problem for the Leafs. So why am I playing lines three and four so much? I mean, that's something I think he has to look at. And, you know, the Ovechkin line did give up one goal, but they were still a plus on the night. I mean, the goal against the crushing goal, the third goal, was really on that third line. So now in the third period, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe he's resting. He's going to play these guys a lot in the third period. Well, they come out and they take a bunch of penalties, and Ovechkin never got on the ice. But still, there were 15 minutes of ice time in that third period where Alex could have played more than the 4 minutes and change he did. I really think Trotz needs to look at maybe shorten his bench a bit. I mean, go get that Ovechkin, Backstrom, and Oshie line out there more. You rest them all season. They've got a lot in the tank. They're playing well. Let's use them more. And I think that'll be something you'll see different in game four. At least I hope they do.
So would you say that the Capitals are playing scared and Trotz is coaching scared?
Well, I do think in that third period last night they did play scared. And again, I go back to, I don't know what they're worried about. That team is fast. They're not faster than the Pittsburgh Penguins. And the Capitals had no problems with the Penguins in the regular season this year. And if you look at the goals the Leafs are scoring, it's not because of their speed. It's because they're putting the pucks in the right spots. They're putting the pucks behind the Capitals' net, and they're just flat out outworking them. And the Capitals get the puck in the offensive zone, and too often they're not willing to pay the price on the board and put the puck behind the net or towards the net to generate the pressure. When they do that, they're scoring goals. I mean, the tying goal on Saturday night in game two was back-to-back shifts of just pure pressure, keeping the puck in, making the simple play. Too often in the first two games, the Capitals were making the fancy play, trying to make that extra pass. They have to work to get more pucks to the net, and they have to win the board battles. They're getting outworked. And I think Babcock is getting his way with the matchups because he's in the games in Washington. He got to put the guys out first, and I think Trotz was a little bit too much. Okay, I'm going to match this line with that line. I think Barry's got to go and dictate the game to Mike Babcock and say, look, I'm going to ride my stars. I'm going to ride Ovechkin, Backstrom, and Oshie. I'm going to put them out there. You know, mix it up. Throw them out there, you know, every third shift or something just to get the Leafs off their game and put your best players on the ice. I'd rather lose with those guys on the ice than, you know, try and put that third line or fourth line against the Austin Matthews line and keep getting killed. So I think they are coaching a little scared and playing a little scared, and they have to just get back to trusting one another and playing their system. And I think they'll be all right if they do that. And they're hanging Holtby out dry way too much.
Ed, you mentioned mental errors earlier, and I think it's something that you can't teach is mental toughness. And this has been a problem with the Caps, obviously, with the playoff failures when they're a top seed, when they had record-breaking season last year. What can Coach Trotz do to change the psyche of this team?
Well, I think the first thing he needs to do is get these guys to start trusting each other. I think the pressure has gotten to them a bit because they're not playing anything like what they did in the regular season defensively. And that's what really bugs me is the way they're in their own zone. And he's got to identify in video some of the ways that they can get the puck out of their zone easier and the ways they could do that. And I think if they do that and start to have success, then they'll stop feeling that pressure. But right now, I think the first three games, they were feeling a lot of pressure. I did like the start in game three. I felt like they really came out and dictated the pace. And then that 5-on-3 was really the turning point in the game. Mm-hmm. You get a two-man advantage, you've got to bury the puck there. And they were too tentative. They were trying for the perfect shot again where, you know, look how the Leafs win the game. They just got a guy in the high slot, they throw the puck there, and the guy tips it in. You know, that's how you score in the playoffs. And they got to get that in their mind, you know, and just get that in their head that the ugly goal is going to win. The hard-working play is going to win. It's not the fancy tic-tac-toe plays. Those just don't happen in the playoffs.
And that's a good point. So that seems to be their style. in terms of ever since Ovechkin's been in town and Backstrom, is that they've been more of a fancy team rather than a grit team, a team that crowds the net. Why is that happening in the postseason? Knowing that in postseason hockey, that typically wins games when you crowd the net and create deflections and whatnot.
Yeah, and they had done such a better job in the regular season of doing that. Marcus Johansson, TJ Oshie, Justin Williams are getting the goals, and that's where they had success in game one with Justin Williams going to the net. They have to get the other lines doing that. They have to get the Burakovsky, Connolly, and Eller line doing that. They've got to get that fourth line, getting pucks deep and going to the net. They seem to think that you have to play differently when you get in the playoffs. And really what they need to do is play the same way they played all season. Play simple, play smart, put the puck to the net. And they just have to get that in their head somehow to do that. Now, I do think that Backstrom, Ovechkin, and Oshie have done that. I mean, that line has really been strong. And Kuznetsov, Williams, and Johansson have done that. Kuznetsov's goal last night was a great play by Johansson, rebound goal. And they just need to do more of that. Now, they're not getting the help they need from their bottom six right now, and their defensemen are not playing well either. I don't think, other than maybe Nate Schmidt, I don't think a defenseman played well in game three. I thought that was the worst game that Kevin Shattenkirk has had in his, Capitals career on Monday night, and that he's got to be better. I mean, if he buries that puck when they're up two men, they're up 4-1, the game's pretty much over. I mean, I'm sure he's kicking himself on that, but he's got to be better. He can't take a delay of game penalty like he did on that in the third period there, because that just takes them out of their rhythm.
So you mentioned that the defense has let down Holtby, but he hasn't been as dominant as I would want him to be. When you think of people, I mean, think of goaltenders in the postseason. You think of Mike Richter. You think of a Patrick Waugh. How come Holtby hasn't played to that level? I know that the defense has been bad, but you would hopefully bank on him being dominant in this postseason run.
Well, I mean, I just think he's going to have to just keep playing the way he is and trusting his teammates a bit. I felt like in game two, he might have felt he had to be a little aggressive, but, trying to look at the three games, I'm having a hard time really faulting him on any of these goals. I mean, the game winning, two of the goals on Saturday night, Capitals defenders lose their sticks, that didn't happen all season the way those guys lost their sticks. I've seen broken sticks, but I haven't seen guys lose their sticks. But I think he's, when you go back to the goals in game three, the first goal, that's a one-on-two. Carlson has got to hit that guy. He has to cut Matthews off, at least impede him. There's no way he should be able to go through there. Now, I know the puck took a weird bounce and everything, but if Carlson eliminates Matthews, that rebound goal doesn't happen. I mean, what you're seeing on goals one and three is Holtby's making the first save. He's stopping the shot, but he's not getting help of his teammates. His teammates are playing well in front of him. Maybe he could have stopped the second goal a little better, but again, that's a screen in front, and it goes off the butt of his teammate. Those are hard to stop. So I think he just has to try not to do too much. Again, like I think a lot of the other guys are trying to do too much and not playing their system. If the other guys around him can settle down and play their system, Brooks Orpik told me after game two, look, Holtby's going to stop the first shot. We have to be there to get the rebound. So that's where they're making a mistake, and that's where they're hanging him out to dry. And that's why it doesn't look like he's playing as well. But you go back, you watch the tape. He's made a lot of huge saves on breakaways and other shots, shots where he's had to fight through screens. Again, I think I go back to, he's got to get some help in front of him. He's being hung out to dry. And, case in point, they had the 5-on-3 and the Capitals don't pay attention. And what was it? Mitch Marner had the chance at a breakaway. I hope he had to come way out to the blue line and save that puck. Otherwise it's a breakaway. So, if I'm going to put anything on him, it's going to be less than 5% of the reason they're losing right now. I put a lot of it on the defensive zone and just the way they're turning the pucks over and being stubborn, as a piece I wrote at WNST.net on Sunday. They're being stubborn about getting the pucks deep. They're trying to carry the puck through the neutral zone and they're turning it over. We talked about this last week. You can't turn the pucks over. It's like throwing interceptions and fumbling the ball in football. And that's what they're doing right now.
Right now you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will, Ray, myself, Wally. We have Ed Frankovic from WNXT talking Washington Capitals. You mentioned on Twitter, the Pittsburgh Penguins playing the best hockey in the postseason. How can the Capitals get to that level?
Well, I think it's getting back playing their system. I mean, I watch the Penguins. They don't change. I mean, it doesn't matter what the score of the game is. They could be winning 3-0. They could be losing 3-0. They play the same way. They play their system. They know where to put their good, their breakouts. I mean, they don't have, you go look at that defensive roster. It's not the greatest defensive roster in the world, but it's solid. They all play the system and they all do exactly what Coach Mike Sullivan's telling them to do. Now up front, they've got just some brilliant players in Crosby and Malkin and Kessel, but you know, the Capitals got Backstrom, they got Ovechkin, they got Oshie. You know, it's, the Capitals should be at the level the Penguins are at. It's not greater, and they're not playing their system. It's a confidence thing, right? It's like in golf, right? You're hitting the ball great, and you hit it to about 5 feet, and you miss the putt. So what do you do on the next hole? You try to hit it to 3 feet, because you think you're going to miss the 5 foot putt. So it's, they have to just realize, hey, you know, these 5-footers are going to start going in. You know, if we play the same way, continue to play the same way, and not panic, and stay structured, we'll get to that level. But what I see again is, case in point again, that third goal on Monday night, all four guys go behind the net. I mean, you're taught at might level, you know, don't chase the puck. Somebody's got to stay in front of the net. Mm-hmm. And that was just inexcusable. And when you don't see the Pittsburgh Penguins do that. And that's just a lack of confidence, a lack of trust. They have to find a way to get their confidence back.
So, Ed, so how can people get your content and reach you on social media?
You can check out my blog out at WNST.net or on social media at Ed Frankovic. Appreciate the love I've been getting from you guys. And, you know, that's how you're going to find my stuff. I'm on Twitter and then out at WNST.net. We're out in the audio vault there. My stuff. If people want to listen to this, I guarantee I'll be retweeting it like I did last week.
Yeah, so, appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys putting that out there as well. I know that's where you can find me.
And also, Ed, give me a prediction for game four. Give me your prediction before I let you go.
Well, I think the Capitals, it's a must win, right? They have to win this game. And I think they have to find a way to do it, whether it's however they do it, they've got to get it done. I'd like to see them find a way to be more structured in their own zone, and I think they will. And I'm going to go with a 3-2 victory in game four up there at Toronto and send it back here to the Verizon Center on Friday night.
I love it. I'm hoping for a shutout, though. I don't want a headache. I want a shutout. But thanks, Ed.
I would love a shutout.
Thanks for being on. We appreciate you.
Hey, anytime, guys. We're still going next week, although if there is a game seven, I'll be at it. But you let me know anytime you want to get together and chat.
Oh, you know it, definitely.
And you know, go Caps. Hopefully we can turn this thing around.
Oh, you hope so. All right. Thanks, Ed. Appreciate you.
Hey, anytime, you guys. Take care.
Take care. All right, again, that's Ed Frankovic from WNST. He's the Capitals insider for the radio for their station. All right, hey, Wiltie, where you at, man? I need you back. Hold on, Wiltie. Wait a minute. All right, there you go, Wiltie.
What's going on, man?
How you doing today, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
We're about to talk Washington Wizards.
Look, I could have went for another 5 or 10 minutes of hockey talk.
Hey, man, we're about to talk Washington Wizards because the Capitals have disappointed us.
Disappointed you because you're a fan, man.
You know it. Don't say now. I've always been a Cats fan.
Okay, so you say.
I've always been a Cats fan. Right now the Wizards are up 1-0 against the Atlanta Hawks. We'll discuss that after the break. Listen to Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You dig.
Deuces.
Chris Webber's slam dunks in your face and Furison blocks the shots that are sent. Check it.
All right, you listen to the Urban Sports Scene. Myself, Wally, Will T, Ray. And we're on Twitter. Tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. No S after sports. Also, like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. I mentioned before the break that the
watch. Also, hold on. Sorry. Also, tweet Will T at The Pursuit of Happiness.
What's that supposed to be?
Got some glasses on and shave. You know what I mean? That's that look.
Oh,
Pursuit of Happiness, like the salt and pepper.
All right, man.
What's about?
It's a great movie.
The Washington Wizards defeated the Atlanta Hawks 114-107 in Game 1. Thoughts on Game 1?
Thoughts were... John Wall.
You got me.
John Wall, Markieff Morris, Bradley Beal, those guys stepped up. took it over for Washington Wizards.
I like bully ball, man, and I love when Markieff Morris played basketball like you see folks play rec ball or street ball, and how he took it personal with the Paul Millsap. He was going at him, and he let it be known for the media and everything. Like, you saw it on the court. I like how he went at Paul Millsap, and it's like you could tell he frustrates Paul Millsap. Because, one, Paul Millsap can't do anything offensively against him because he's actually in great position defensively. And then offensively, you know, Morris is going right at him. So I just think I like the competitive nature of Markieff Morris more than anything in Game 1.
I mean, we praise John Wall in his play, but his defensively, he left a lot out on the floor, left to be desired.
Yeah. He put effort.
Yeah, he put effort, but Schroeder.
Schroeder,
he
25 points.
Yeah.
Yeah, he made jump shots.
He made 50%.
He made jump shots.
50% of
like, and anyone who's seen Schroeder plays know he's not a great jump shooter.
Yeah, I think, like, to me, you know, he's fast. The dude, he's fast and he can drive. But watching that game, I'm to your point, like watching that game, he made J's. Like, so if you play under the high screen and roll, he's making jump shots. It is what it is. He's going to get his points. So I look at, like, Schroeder, like, I'm not going to say, you know what, he's going to have another 25-point effort against John Wall. Because if you looked at him, even when John Wall got into
Let's
him.
Let's hope he doesn't.
Well, when John Wall was checking him, got into him, pause, he defended him. He defended him good.
The defense across the board is a problem.
That's always been a problem. Yeah, that's true.
It's not just John Wall. Gortat, he had a nice dunk. It looked tough at the end of the game when he dunked on Millsap. But he played no defense. Dwight Howard, who is clearly a shell of himself, had 14 boards. Paul Millsap, they both looked as though they were, you know, tougher on the inside, which is the biggest problem for me. Markieff added 21. He's not going to do that every game.
That's true.
You got to play some defense. You have to.
Then also you need Bojanovic and you need Otto Porter to step up. You gave up a first-round pick for Bojanovic, and then Otto is going
to
demand, most likely, a max contract at the end of the season. You know, Otto Porter had a great the first 50 games of the season. After that, the last 32 was so-so. You know, now you need him to consistently come out every other night because you're not playing every night. You need him to consistently come out every other night and be that strong third option on offense.
So the only reason Otto Porter's stats went down, to be totally honest with you, you could tell the team was just trying to incorporate Bogdanovic more than anything. It wasn't his play for real.
I understand that. But this is what I'm saying. If you're going to be a guy that is going to be the third option for this team, you have to know. We have to know, the fan base and your teammates has to know that you can consistently be. You can consistently provide offense for this team, the other intangibles that you bring.
He only has 6 shots.
Yeah, he said 10 points on 6 shots. That's
okay.
What are you supposed to do with 6 shots?
And then,
if you make them all, you get 12 points. Unless they're threes. I mean, he hit a big three, too.
Yeah, he did hit a big three. But that's what it comes to being more aggressive offensively. If you're going to be the third option for this team, you have to be aggressive offensively.
The thing is, yes, he's the third option. But you had, again, Keith playing well. Keith was hit more threes than Porter did.
Yeah,
I understand.
One more, and he took 19 field goals. He was more aggressive. And you also had Gortat with 14 points. So your entire starting five had it going that game. So I don't think he had to be the playmaker or scorer that, you know, he typically is or typically has been during the regular season.
I mean, to win an NBA championship, you need 3 guys that can create shots for themselves and others.
Do you think all
I think so. I think you need 3 guys.
I wouldn't say 3. I think that
I'm not saying they have to be like you have to have three guys who could break down defense one on one, but they, guys who can make the proper pass, who can get past that man, or you know, like things like that. Auto, I think you need three guys off the who can create shots for themselves and others.
Auto creates
and Auto teammates. And Auto is one of those guys.
Yeah, he creates for his teammates. Not in terms of like a John Wall breaking the defender down and then setting somebody up, but you know, making the right pass. The right
exactly.
Lead.
That's exactly
that
what I mean.
He's that player. I mean, I would like Otto Porter to be utilized a little bit more compared to that he was in game one. I know he had 31 minutes, but I just felt like down the stretch, you know, even though Kelly Oubre played a good game.
Kelly Oubre has been stepping up the last 20 games of the regular season into the playoffs.
But if you look at the track record, one, the regular season, that Otto Porter had a really good season in the regular season. And then also going a year where when Paul Pierce was here, that, you know, a couple years ago when they had that good run to play in the postseason, Otto Porter played good getting a lot of burden in the postseason. So he's the guy I think that makes the right play in playoff time. Because in the playoffs, you need guys who play smart, who play the right way, who's going to do the right thing in clutch situations. Not a guy who's going to turn the ball over, a guy who may try to get his own shot. You need a guy who's really into the team game in the postseason. Because it's all about playing team ball in the postseason to advance. And I think that having a guy like that should get more burn. In clutch situations, knowing that, you know, you're playing one of the biggest. It's a big game. It's the postseason.
It is. One question for you both. We're watching the Toronto and Milwaukee game. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee has a 1-0 lead, right? Why is it because the visiting team stole the first game on the road that everyone says they have home court advantage from here on out?
It's because
I don't get it, because you still technically
– You do have
– No, Toronto still technically has more home games than Milwaukee. So how can they have the home court advantage?
Because you erase it. You
don't erase it. You don't erase it because you still have to go back.
You have to go back, but you're looking at it like in terms of the home court advantage, you still get – so in essence, you're thinking about it like you got three games.
I hear you.
At your court.
Yes.
So and the premise of the thought process is you're going to win all your games at home.
But that's a false. That's a.
No, just that's what it means, though. You asked me.
Whoever came up with it, I think it's not – technically right.
I'm just telling you, you asked the question.
I understand. No, I feel you, but I it's just, you know, it's more of a rhetorical question.
Oh, I can
of anything.
Tell. Then you weren't really asking me a question.
Yeah, I mean, no, I was interested in your thoughts. You're an intelligent guy. I was interested in your thoughts.
On Twitter, my man Patrick said, keep the energy about the Wizards. Keep the energy and stay physical. Wizards have a lot of confidence left. Left some shots and points on the court in game one.
And I don't know if it was because it was Easter, but if you look at the crowd at the beginning of the game, mm-hmm. it wasn't at max capacity. You know, it's a playoff game. It's a big game.
Think so?
It wasn't filled up.
Think, right?
It wasn't filled up starting at the tip off.
You think it was filled up?
I know that it was Easter. You know, I know a lot of people had Easter plans, but it didn't look like it was. It was a raucous crowd that could provide a home court advantage.
No, I like the white shirts, but that was about it. That was the biggest change.
Yeah,
and if you looked at the upper level seats, they weren't all filled.
Yeah, exactly. I think people that purchase tickets for Wednesday's game,
brother,
got to get there early. You got to provide this team a home court advantage.
No, to me, it's because of the team they're playing. I guarantee. When the Wizards step into the Eastern Conference Finals against Cleveland, you're going to see a raucous crowd. But that's what it's going to take. But if you're playing Milwaukee, if you're playing Toronto, if you're playing Atlanta.
What about the Celtics? The Celtics are yeah, if the Celtics get past this series against Chicago.
They're down 10 right now.
Right. Evidently, John Wall, they believe that this is a rivalry.
Yeah, it is a rivalry. It's an emerging or evolving rivalry, yes. But one of those two teams is what it would take. And even when Wally and I went, you know, to cover that game, the last home game against the Celtics, it took a while to fill up. And Boston fans had more seats filled than the Wizards fans. And you know what? That's a financial decision. Yeah, I would get my tickets up in a heartbeat if you offer me the right price.
All right, I would.
Guys aren't fans for real.
I'm not a Wizards fan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's a real fan. We already discussed that because he gets mad. He doesn't want to talk to people.
I'm a real what?
You're a real fan.
Of what? Of what team?
In general.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You talking about the Wizards.
He gets mad at, like, about Georgetown.
You talking about the Wizards, though.
No, you said
we were
real fans because we would sell our seats.
Yeah, I would sell my tickets for
if you have a diehard Boston fan who says, I'll give you an extra $200.
Are you talking Redskins?
I'm talking about specifically of the Wizards.
You talking about the Wizards, exactly. See?
Would you too if I dog would get the right price?
I would. All right, go back. Wait, hold on. So game two is tomorrow. Where's the key for the Wizards to go up 2-0?
Bench play. One thing that I noticed that Did I take your idea?
No, ignore me, man.
Oh no, bench play. The first thing
I feel like you cut us off, but you let Ed talk. You know, it's
no. You're on time, dude. That's why he was on time. You're not.
No. Funny. So
shot me back. So.
No, if you notice during the first quarter and into the second quarter on Sunday when the reserves started to come in, that's when the lead started to flip, and when Atlanta took advantage. So I think you need Bogdanović, you need Brandon Jennings, you need Jason Smith, you need those guys to come out full of energy and also not let there be up in the level of play and skill from the first unit to the second unit.
I think you have to play a consistent defensive game. And what I mean by that is Kent Bazemore shouldn't come off the bench and get open looks. That was frustrating to watch because he'll bury him. As you know, he got ice in his veins. He may not be a guy that's a marquee name in the league, but you don't think so?
No, I'm not a big Bazemore fan.
Why not?
It doesn't matter who he plays against. He comes to play no matter what.
He plays great defense. He's a great defender.
He's a great defender, and he knocks down shots.
Right, he knocks down open shots.
He's been off most of the season. But if you want, if you're gonna say Tim Hardaway,
when it matters, who pays attention to Kent Bazemore during the season? None of us.
I do.
You don't even watch. You don't even watch basketball during the season.
It's called do my research.
You went off the numbers, but if you watch him in the playoffs, historically,
he had a good game. One.
He always Kent Bazemore is fearless. I don't care who he's playing against, and he's confident. And he trains with Steph Curry.
Yeah, he's confident.
When you train with the best, sometimes it rubs off on you.
No, absolutely not.
He can hit a step back three like Steph?
No, I didn't say that either. What I'm saying is...
Both teams play hard, man.
To go back to my point, defensively, they have to play a complete game. You have to. You can't have a letdown because Trader's out the game, because Millsap is on the bench. You know, play hard. And that goes to reserves. Brandon Jennings, his defense annoys me.
What about it annoys you? What about it annoys you?
The effort.
He does leave some to be desired coming defending the
pick
and roll.
Look at his body language. It's as if he's got the and one mentality. He's out there to make a move, to make the crowd go ooh, whatever. But defensively, I just don't see the effort consistently from him.
My man at 4000 Ye says take care of Paul Millsap. That's a key to victory.
Paul Millsap is soft.
Ain't he though? Okay, let's get to this point about Paul Millsap being soft. I think he's one of, like, the most softest big men in the world. I believe this. I'm starting to think that.
I don't think that's a fair assessment.
I thought he was tougher. I think you know what? You're right.
When he plays against the good competition,
he backs down. You're right. You're so right.
I don't think that's a fair statement.
Like, to me, how do you complain? Like, I have this issue. Like, you complain about calls all day, right? You go into the line like 800 times. I'm not even getting on that. The dude flopped on a 3-point shot. Like, literally, really flopped on a 3-point shot. He shot the ball, acted like he got touched, and like acted like his mother died when he fell to the ground. The thing was like the worst flop I've seen in my life. And then you won't come on. Then you won't come on talking about they're playing MMA. They're doing MMA on the basketball.
That's called working the refs. And then you know that. You know that.
That's why he got dunked on. MMA though.
That's why he got dunked on.
In the NBA playoffs, when you know you play.
And you play against the Wizards, who are not a physical team.
Exactly. Who's a soft squad?
This is not the Celtics. This is not Detroit basketball. Detroit Pistons from yesteryear is who you can call MMA.
MMA, come on, like, man. Really though?
Well, you can label it. Yeah, he's soft.
He's working the refs. That's all it was, man. I'm not going to call a professional soft NBA player soft.
Why?
You can't say Charmin?
As a fan,
I'm not going to call him soft. Paul Millsap does play physical. He does bang down on the block.
He flops on every post. On the post. He flops on every post.
I don't necessarily feel comfortable calling him soft.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Charmin. Charmin is what? Touch it. It's pretty soft.
That's your opinion.
I'm just saying, like, you can't complain and say MMA. Like, I don't want to hear that.
It's called working the refs, man.
And like Ray said, you said it about the Wizards. Of all teams, the Wizards. That ruins street cred right there.
I mean, the Wizards did play physical Sunday. They did play physical Sunday.
Other than, I'll give him the the questionable jump ball call. Like, I'll give him that. Like, that was ridiculous. I'll give him that.
Okay. I mean,
that one I'll give him.
When Kevin Love is called soft, most people agree with it, including yourself, right? You agree with that assessment. But now we can't call Paul Millsap soft.
Nah, so.
Is it because he's black?
No, it's not. No, I never call Kevin Love soft.
No,
I said, no, I know. I said he doesn't play defense. I said Kevin Love doesn't play defense.
So, are you PC. Saying, so what you say, he's Charmin, Kevin Love Charmin.
No, he doesn't play. He doesn't play as physical of game as he used to when he was in Minnesota. Yeah. I'll say that.
You're right. You're right.
He doesn't play as physical of a game.
When he had more weight on him.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, his game has changed. Just like Chris Bosh when he went to Miami, his game wasn't as physical.
Yeah.
Except at certain points.
At certain points in the postseason.
Chris Bosh, his physical is funny though. It was, you know, he's not somebody who's going to scare you. I was just sorry. Chris Bosh, come on now. Dude, we name the all-time soft team. How you gonna call it? First team all soft right now. And come on, man.
So you Chris Bosh,
Paul Millsap at their level. Yes, they can say, dude, you're nobody. And they're right, I'm not. When it comes to basketball and the NBA, but I can have an opinion.
We're all entitled to our opinion.
And if it wasn't like Floyd Mayweather said famously. And the thing is, if it weren't for us, the fans, critiquing and watching them and going to see these games, there wouldn't be and watching the games on TV. There's no NBA. So they need to accept the criticism and keep it moving. I mean, you can laugh it off. You get paid millions. But, you know, if more than one person is saying something about you, typically that means it's true.
Not necessarily.
And what does Ray Geezy always say?
Real people do real things.
Exactly.
Soft people do soft things. There you go.
Exactly. We can get back.
Kevin Love soft. Come on. Will.
More NBA playoff talk after the break. Listen to Urban Sports saying.
For ages.
Get it.
Deuces.
You're listening to Urban Sports Team with Will, Ray, and myself, Wally. All right, man. First off, what are your thoughts about the NBA playoffs?
Oh, it's been so much better than the regular season. Thank goodness it came, because everybody knows March Madness kind of took our attention and focus off of the NBA.
Your attention, not mine.
March Madness didn't take
attention. What's your playoff game or series that you?
The Pacers and the Cavaliers. For me,
it would have to be Houston and OKC. Really? That's the one I'm most excited to see, because I think Russell Westbrook is going to bring them back to at least even it up.
I'm gonna tell you, like, that's good. That's a good series to talk about. I'm gonna tell you why I'm not a big fan of Russell Westbrook carrying him to beat the Houston Rockets.
I didn't say they would beat, but
make it competitive, because you still have to play a brand of team ball or the coaching staff has to allow a team game. And Russell Westbrook, even though with his triple doubles and whatnot we saw in the regular season, he does a lot of me stuff, especially in game one. He did a lot of me stuff in game one. a lot of me stuff. They got to run like more offense through other people for them to kind of like be productive, to kind of play with Houston. If you go ahead.
And no, and there's also another series that I'm excited to see, which comes on later tonight, the Clippers versus the Jazz.
Yeah, that could be the, that could
of
be
course.
The,
yeah, that, yeah. That, there's no losers in that for you.
Sure is it.
Whoever wins that series, you good.
Why, yeah, why is that? Did I miss something about that?
Like, no, that's because I predicted those would be the two teams that would challenge Golden State.
Oh, that's why. I was wondering
he said that Utah was a top three team. They finished fifth, though, so that's not good, bad.
And you both laughed. You both laughed.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and they still were top three, but I still respect, you know, that you like Utah. I never had a problem with Utah. I didn't think they were top three based on the fact that you got San Antonio and Golden State. And the Clippers, who you predicted to win the finals.
Well, you said we laughed.
You did.
I'm sure I laughed. Were they top three?
No, they didn't.
So
no,
I was right. So ha.
No, but you
no. I didn't. I said a team that would challenge Golden State.
No.
It wasn't top three. It was who would challenge
Golden
State.
You said both, but.
I said both.
You also picked the Clippers to win the championship. So
I did.
It's a win-win situation for you at this point.
It absolutely is. I don't think the Clippers are going to win a championship.
I don't think the Clippers winning the series either.
That's what you picked in the beginning of the season.
I did.
Yeah, that's what
I absolutely did.
They're still capable, you know.
I mean, you both picked the Falcons to win the Super Bowl. You saw how that turned out for both of you.
Let's stay on topic, all right?
Okay.
All right. That was a good one, though. I'm not going to lie. I respect that, all right? You got to do what you got to do. Ray, hit your quote. You going to leave hanging, Ray?
Huh?
Did you hit your quote?
Real people do real things.
Good job.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, man. Back to the series, though. Do you think – because I was thinking this about the Clippers thing. If the Clippers lose this series, are they done? Like, Chris Paul out? Is DeAndre Jordan out? Is Blake Griffin
gone? Well, I think if the Clippers lose this series, I definitely think Blake Griffin is gone. I think that'll eventually be the home for Carmelo Anthony.
What the heck is that going to do?
He has trouble.
I'm not saying it's going to do anything for him, but I do think Blake Griffin gets to a point where he's frustrated with – he's going to look around. He's going to be a free agent this summer. He's going to say, what can we possibly do to get better? And there's nothing you could do. Maybe. And evidently there's friction between him and Chris Paul.
Maybe the Clippers will draft Bam from Kentucky. Because, you know, he's going to be a late first rounder.
He is late first rounder.
Exactly.
Hey, man, real people do real things. I was close. I told you my picks were pretty good. That's all I got to say.
And
Barry is not
for me. I wrote a good article. Check it out, urbansportscene.blogspot.com, in reference to the Pacers acquisition of Jeff Teague and why, you know, that one transaction would help.
Nice plug.
And aid the Pacers to challenge the Cavaliers. And to be honest with you, they've been right there in both games. They just need to learn how to close. And I think Nate McMillan as a coach should go and watch some film of the Greg Popovich days and how to defend LeBron. They play LeBron way too close, he is picking them apart as a result. You know, I would rather see LeBron take more perimeter shots than you just let him get into the teeth of your defense and find an open man, because everybody around him can shoot. Channing Frye, Deron Williams, Kyrie Irving, J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, my goodness. They have a team that can put up points consistently night in, night out, but they can't defend. So if you can find a way to limit LeBron in terms of him passing, make him more of a shooter, I think you got a chance. I think you can go home and even this thing up.
Let me ask you this. You're just talking about the Indiana Pacers. How do you feel about Paul George's post-game comments the past two games?
I totally disagree with the first assessment, because there was no time. C.J. Miles didn't have time to get the ball back.
I agree.
But what in particular are you referencing for the second game?
Second game, him essentially calling out Lance Stephenson and Miles Turner, right, saying that they need to step up and do a little bit more.
Well, he's trying to become a leader.
I understand that, but I think isn't the first part of becoming a leader is you have those conversations behind closed doors. And if when you do talk to the public, you say we as a team need to do better.
I think that – go ahead, Ray.
There you go.
See, to me, a leader is somebody who just – takes it on himself. And I had a problem with that too. I have a problem with people. I hate when LeBron does it. LeBron does it a lot. I hate when he does it.
Like, LeBron is the master.
He's the master of it. Like, talk about what you can do. If you want to address them in house.
You know what LeBron does? He says, first of all, he says, well, we need, I'm the leader of this team.
I hate that.
He says, first he says, I'm the leader of this team. And then he says, we need to get better. But then he specifically calls out a guy or a couple of guys.
Yeah.
No, I thought it was a we thing. What happened? Why are you calling me out specifically?
But I hate when you put yourself above anybody. Like, we know you're the best player on the team. So I don't need to hear, like, as, you know, I need to do that. Like, what you, which I mean, in terms of, and my teammates will follow, what you need to do is talk about what you need to do better for your team to win. Perfect. I think that's a leader.
I'm not going to say I agree or disagree with his comments, but here's how I interpret it. Paul George is tired of living in LeBron's shadow. He feels like he has an opportunity now to redeem himself based on the fact that he's lost several series to LeBron James in the past. With that being said, I think he has more of a competitive edge and is rubbing off. Mm. You know, I mean, it's coming off in a way where he's calling out people. I think Miles Turner can take it. He's somebody who's played with Paul George now 2 years. He respects him as a leader. But the wild card there is Stevenson. Stevenson is an irritant, and he's somebody that he's somebody that you know can rub his teammates the wrong way. He has, which is why he was, you know, bouncing around the league. So with that being said, you know this guy's on a slippery slope. He doesn't have much. He doesn't have. What am I trying to say? He doesn't have a whole, like, he can't do but so much.
Yeah.
Because his lease is short. Leash is short. That's, yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Paul George knows that. So if he responds in the meeting, I'm like, oh, we get him out of here.
Well, I think essentially what Paul George just did is he started to lay the groundwork for him to part in Indiana.
It's a possibility.
And go where?
But I give Stevenson credit, though.
Go to L.A.
Stevenson actually.
Lakers?
Know, yes.
Yeah, Lakers. Yeah.
Okay.
Lakers. Maybe not even the Lakers. Maybe to the Clippers.
Yeah. But I know
Blake Griffin is a free agent.
That's a good point.
Maybe he says, okay, I can get back to L.A. I can play with Chris Paul. I can play with DeAndre Jordan. I can win a title.
It's a possibility. I mean, I like him calling out. Certain, I didn't like him calling out his teammates, and especially when, you know, game one where I thought he kind of shied away at the end.
No, that was a good double team.
No, twice. No.
Yeah. C.J. Miles made the right.
No. C.J. Miles made the right play.
Paul George made the right play by giving it up to C.J. Miles.
He found open man. Absolutely.
And C.J. Miles did the right basketball play by pump faking. The only thing he did wrong was he faded away. Right. That's the only thing he did wrong.
Here's the thing, though.
That's it.
It's a coaching problem, too, because the play before that, LeBron did the same thing, ran right at him and double teamed and forced the ball out of his hand.
Should have set a screen.
So, as a coach, you know that's coming. You're going to put in Paul George's hands. You expect a double team. Draw up a play. That's what Nate McMillan failed, in my opinion. All he had to do was,
when they did that, to draw, just slide a screen over there.
Because, I mean, honestly, C.J. Miles is an excellent open shooter.
Yeah, he's a good
shooter. And he had a very makeable shot.
No, he did.
No, he is. I mean, he did.
But that rubbed me the wrong way because, to me, you know, it seemed like he was saying, I respect my teammates and I have confidence. He said, I have all the faith in the world, my guys, but I should be the one taking the shot.
Yeah.
And when we covered them, another team we covered, when I was talking to Jeff Teague, I asked him, I'm like, look, Paul was in foul trouble. How come you guys didn't step up? He said, man, it's not about one person. It's like
about all of us. That's true.
Specifically, not even the comments. It's just the mannerisms after C.J. Miles.
Yeah,
missed
he was
a
so
shot.
Pissed off. He was so pissed. You could see his body.
Yeah, the antics after that, that's bad. You talking about how can you call out Lance Stevenson for his piss poor body language when you did that after game one?
Very good point.
Yeah, and that's
it's not leadership,
bro. That's part of becoming a leader. And that's what you mentioned, LeBron James. LeBron James was the king of poking his lip out and pouting. And you could just tell when he was mentally out of it.
Yeah.
And he had to grow past that. And Paul George is going to do the same thing.
Yep.
You know who needs to be a leader? My man, Carmelo Anthony.
He is. He's the leader of a household. He's the leader of the Knicks.
Of his household?
Yes.
He got marriage problems right now too, bro.
What?
Melo.
Divorced. Separated.
Oh, no. Nah, we're not going to talk about that.
Phil Jackson called out Melo. We'll talk about that after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig.
Deuces.
The Commission. Uncle Paulie. P. Diddy. Cesar Leo. De Janeiro. Charlie Baltimore. Iceberg Slim, the most shady, Frankie Baby. We here.
You know what beef is? Do you know
ain't
what
going
beef
nowhere.
Is?
Uh-uh.
Ask yourself.
Uh-uh.
Do you know what beef is?
Uh-huh. Check out this bizarre rapper style used by me. The B.I.G. I put my key, you put your key in. Money will be seeing. We'll reach the feel of feeling. Check it. My calico been cop. This rap Alfred Hitchcock drop top notch. Player hating gon' stop. This instant, rappers too persistent. Quick to spit. Biggie name on.
Make my name taste like herbs when you speak it. See me in the streets, your jewelry, you can keep it. That be our little secret, see me. B that is, I that is, G Wiz. Sick of what I'm feeling, my big. I hope they know my new cutter for kidnap kids. I'm in they air, throw them over the bridge. That's how it is, my shit is laid out. What? That be shit, that shit is played out. Y'all got the goal. All I make is one phone call. All y'all disappear by tomorrow. All your guns is borrowed. I don't feel sorrow. Actually, your man passed the gap to me. Now check this, what's beef? Beef is when you need two cats to go to sleep. Beef is when your moms ain't safe up in the streets. Beef is when I see you. Guaranteed to be in ICU. One more time, what's beef? Beef is when you make your enemies start your G. Beef is when you roll no less than 30 deep. Beef is when I see you. Guaranteed to be your ICU. Check it. I done smoked with the best of them. Shot at the rest of them. Was about 100 or more. Maybe less of them. Got my rocks off. That's from the brook. Just be wildin' on you. Just be styling on you.
I know, right? Yeah, you know it. What's deep, dog? What you know about that? Anyway, listen to Herb Sports Team with Will T, Ray, and myself, Wiley. I'm doing good, Will, man. You should be proud of me, man.
We talk about sports here. And hot.
What you trying to say, man? You trying to say, man?
Nothing.
Talking about sports. Anyway, man, I mentioned Carmelo Anthony, Phil Jackson. It's been a rough couple of days for Carmelo Anthony. I'm not going to talk. I talked about what, you know, the situation he had in his personal life.
According to the press.
According to the press.
TMZ is usually 100% accurate.
They are 100% correct. All the time. But anyway, team president Phil Jackson said Melo would be better off somewhere else. Do you agree with Phil?
I want to go first only because, and I'll be quick. And this also goes in reference to Paul George and everybody else. What do we like as fans? We like for people to be honest. This politically correct nonsense is annoying sometimes, especially when a guy like LeBron James, you know, fakes being humble. I think be yourself, be honest, be real. This is how Phil Jackson feels. Share it. Don't say, well, you know, blah, 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 blah. I think Carmelo, you know, we'll have to reevaluate. He's a big part of it. No, be real. You don't want him here. You want to build around Porzingis. Bottom line, you should. And there's nothing wrong with saying that. But I think Carmelo, as good as he's been, he's clearly, over the last several years, had his difficulties in a Knick uniform. Bottom line.
So here's my one problem with Phil Jackson coming out and making that statement.
Yeah.
Players get fined if they come to the press and openly request a trade. You're the team president of the New York Knicks organization. Mm-hmm. You can't come out here and make that type of statement. For one, players are held to a standard just like you are, and you make that statement. For two, you devalue Carmelo Anthony by saying that you devalue his trade value in the eyes of any other team that wants to trade for him, because you say, because people are going to say, well, Phil, we know you want to get rid of him, so we're not going to give you a dollar. We're going to give you 50 cents on a dollar. We're going to give you 60 cents on a dollar.
Remember my statement earlier. Typically, if it's probably more than one, I mean more than two, but when you have more than one person saying the same thing, George Karl came out with a book and he talked about Carmelo. He was criticized for it. Now, would you rather Phil write a book later about Carmelo? No.
Well, he is going to write a book later and put it in there. He did it before.
That is his track record. But I'm just saying, but he's up front this time at least.
I respect that.
And you mentioned the players. I mean, LeBron James all the time says we need to pick up more people.
Never come out and requested a trade,
but still, you can say that the organization needs some work on how they're doing things. Even Porzingis skipped his
exit interview because he was mad in the dysfunction.
What's wrong with that?
Phil Jackson,
he being real.
But this is my thing about Phil Jackson. If you're gonna come out and talk about Carmelo Anthony, you can't win with Carmelo Anthony. You're not even helping your team out because, one, you're forcing your coach who doesn't run the triangle to run the triangle. So he can't even give you a better product because you, the president, is forcing the coach to run a system that he can't really, that he's not comfortable in running. When this coach, when he was in Phoenix, ran a decent system with less talent than he has here in New York.
Another thing, also, you wait until the end of the season to come up, and I understand it would have caused more disruption if he had came out middle of the season and said Carmelo Anthony needs to go. But Carmelo Anthony, like a G, answered all the questions after every game,
sure did,
every press conference, any of the headlines, you know, with Phil pretty much fishing and throwing out subliminals through using the media. Carmelo Anthony stood tall. He answered every question. He never ran away from it. So for that, he should be commended. No, he should be, because Phil Jackson didn't do it. Phil Jackson, you the president of the organization. Why the hell weren't you there present during the season to stand up and answer the questions when you're using second and third parties in the media to get your message out? No, be a man. Come to the podium and say, look, I think we need to make a change. We need to take this in another direction. And three, Carmelo Anthony has been the star for this team for the past 5 years. He deserves better rather than you to come out in the media after you've had a private conversation with the man and say he just has to go. He deserves more than that.
What's keeping Carmelo in the Knicks is pride. You're not going to force me out, basically, is what he's saying.
And if
I'm going to leave, it's going to be on my terms.
Absolutely.
That's where we are. But if he wants to win, he should have left. Bottom line. And the thing is, we don't see Carmelo off camera.
Mm-hmm.
And again, where there's smoke, there's fire, man. Carmelo Anthony is a problem. This is why, to me, he's had difficulty going deep into the playoffs on any team he's been on.
The only thing I would say
about that. I don't necessarily agree with that, because if you look at the teams he's been on, there's only truly been one team that you could say that he's had a talented roster. And that's the team when Mike Woodson coached the Knicks. I think it was 3 or 4 years ago when they won 54 games with Jason Kidd was the point guard. And that's the only team that you can ever say was a truly talented team that Carmelo Anthony played on.
This team was talented, but that's a whole different argument.
This team has talent, but when I'm talking about a talented team from 1 through 12.
Oh, okay.
That was a truly talented team.
Well, I think
this team had the right combination of youth and some veterans, but the veterans broke down.
I just feel like, again, if they got to run an offense they wanted to run, it would be a better team.
He had D'Antoni before that. You know I like Carmelo, right, Wally? Come on now. Going back to high school, I've been a fan of Carmelo's. Here's the thing, though. Will, does he play defense?
No.
Is he a ball?
Don't play defense, though.
Uh-huh.
James Harden doesn't play defense.
They won 54 games. Isaiah Thomas doesn't play defense. They won 50 games.
I honestly think in this
Kyrie Irving doesn't play defense, and they won 50 games.
They got LeBron now. That's why.
Yeah, when Kyrie Irving was going by himself, they won 25 games. And James Harden, last year, they had a terrible season when they weren't in a D'Antoni system with people like Trevor Ariza, who's going to hoist threes like Brian, our friend. So here's the thing. Look, I'm just saying. Here's the thing. You know Carmelo does not make people around him better.
True.
That's the problem with him.
But this is the thing, though.
But you still gave him that contract knowing that he doesn't make players around him better.
That's a James Dolan problem. James Dolan knows that Carmelo Anthony sells tickets.
But you get
bottom line, because Carmelo could have went to Chicago or he could have went to Houston.
But you have a lot of scores who don't make people better. Like, and Kobe Bryant won championships and didn't make anybody better.
Kobe Bryant didn't make anybody better. No, are you kidding me? LeBron is better because of Kobe Bryant.
No, you're talking
on the court in the Florida game.
You're talking about Melo. You're using Melo as an example in terms of making people better. Kobe Bryant doesn't make anybody better.
You agree with that?
That's facts.
He doesn't make his teammates better. So I'm not. That's not.
I mean, like, he pushes them. He pushes them hard in practice. But if you're talking about his play on the court, others can feed off of his play. Absolutely not.
Make anybody better. Like, you can't say he's making.
He's a scorer.
I don't knock.
He was a scorer and he was a good defender. He was a good defender.
To the argument that Melo can't win. This is the thing. Melo, people forget. Like, the thing that messed up Melo is that he went to New York. If he stayed in Denver, we wouldn't be having this whole talk. Because to be honest with you, when he got drafted to Denver, the Nuggets were garbage before he got there. And he took that team
to the postseason. He helped turn the organization. I totally agree. So he can win games. They went to the playoffs with him. Absolutely.
And that team was horrible before him. Horrible.
Yeah. In fact, that team made the playoffs every year Carmelo was there. Absolutely. If I'm not mistaken.
I'm not when he was in any Denver. Of that, but that's as far as he reached. I just feel he like reached his limit, bro. It's like Marty Schottenheimer.
He's a good coach.
He could take you, but so far.
But this is
I'm not disagreeing with that. And let me ask you guys, who makes people around them better and why? And then we can talk about if Kobe made people better.
Hold on, this is Gerald Smith.
Look at Gerald Smith. He's made Gerald Smith.
And who was Gerald Smith with right before that?
Huh?
Who was Denver with Melo? No, he was on New York with Melo.
LeBron has made people better. Look at Channing Frye. Channing Frye's had a resurgence because playing with LeBron James.
Yeah, everybody.
This is what I'm going to say. When Melo had a pass first point guard in Denver with Chauncey Billups, and then when he had it that 1 year in New York with Jason Kidd, a guy who's a facilitator, his teams were had a level of success. True or not?
True. True.
Derrick Rose, although is a dynamic playmaker, is not a facilitator. He's just not. So what you needed to do is you need to bring in a guy who's a facilitator.
Calderon was there.
Get the hell out of here, Jose Calderon. Jose Calderon is not a starting level NBA point guard. Get the hell out of here with that. Okay, so I would have even accepted Rondo. If you had said Rondo, I could have went. I could have got down with that. I could have got down with Rondo.
I don't like Rondo.
But Jose Calderon, get out of here.
You know I'm not gonna say anything nice about Rondo. You can't do that to me, bro.
Jose Calderon is a guy who can run a system.
Oh man, you can't do that.
So just who are we looking for to pair with Melo? Then this is the same thing that was said about Iverson throughout his career. Now both Iverson and Carmelo, dynamic playmakers. Look, they score. They're fun to watch.
But they
struggle to be great teammates and leaders. And this is the thing. And no matter who you pair up with them, you're gonna always find a problem.
Think about it. That's what scorers do. Like scorers, 9 times out of 10 aren't making you better. Their job is to score. Like AI wasn't making anybody better.
So
his job was to score.
So can you make adjustments to your game in order to make people better?
Yes,
John Wall. Wall, when he came into the league, John Wall went 100 miles per hour all the time.
True.
He was a flat out scorer, a freakish athlete, but he got better because he adjusted his game according to what his coaches instructed him to do, and he makes people around him better.
Well,
John Wall does that. Carmelo can't. Why is that? Carmelo is stubborn, and Carmelo.
I don't even think he's stubborn. He doesn't. He may not believe in the talent that's been placed around him. I think that's something that people want to examine.
Carmelo Anthony is the traditional. He's the scorer, dog. That's what it is. And you're using John
he's
Wall.
He's Bernard King. He's Dominique Wilkins.
John Wall, in essence, is a point guard. Even he got that. That's what
it's
he
not
is.
Apples to apples.
You know what I mean? So, but Melo is a scorer. Like if you're telling me who's improved their team more compared to Melo or Kobe, then we can have that discussion because they are scorers. Like those are scores. Like they're professional scores. And that's what it is. Like Kevin Durant, you think Kevin Durant makes anybody better? To be real with you? No, he doesn't. He's a scorer though. That's what he is. He's a scorer. He may make it easy for it because he demands a double team.
You know what
but
I think?
He is a scorer.
You know what I think? I think the smart coaches realize that when you have a guy who's a scorer.
Yeah, you were.
Let's look at Larry Brown when Allen Iverson went to the NBA final. Mm-hmm. He said, "I have a score. So what am I going to do? I'm going to get a defensive center, Dikembe Mutombo. I'm going to get a guy, a stretch four, Keith Van Horn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get a facilitator, Eric Snow." So he put the necessary pieces around him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you need to do with Melo. You need the smart coach. All right, let's look at Isaiah Thomas
the
in Boston.
Necessary pieces.
Let's look at Isaiah Thomas in Boston.
Yeah, that's a good example too. That's a very good example.
What did Brad Stevens
they built around him.
They built around. They put the necessary piece. Isaiah Thomas doesn't play defense, but what did he do? Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, two guys who are exceptional playing defense.
They're grunt guys.
You got Al Horford, a guy who can rebound, play defense, facilitate, and score in the box. Amir Johnson, a guy who can stretch, rebound, play defense, and protect the rim, and who can shoot the three a little bit. So you go out and you build a team around them. I can honestly say I'm a Knicks fan. I'm a guy who follows the Knicks. They have not gone out and put the necessary right pieces around Carmelo for him to win. It's simple and plain.
I'm not gonna argue.
I can't say the triangle isn't or is right for Carmelo. I will say this. I will say this. Two of the most dynamic scorers in the NBA, in the history of the NBA, Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, were able to find success in the triangle.
Yeah, I don't think – I think Melo can score. Melo can score in the triangle. I'm just talking about the other pieces for them to win. Well, if you got to get a coach that wants to run that offense.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. If you want – that's the truth. I mean, but if you're not going to do that, let them do what they do best. Like you can't – if I ask you to coach my team, Will – and you're comfortable running high screen and roll, and I'm like, you know what? Nah, I don't want you to run high screen and roll. I want you to go in the block 24/7. I don't want no high screen and roll. But you're comfortable running high screen and roll.
I agree with you guys in the sense that there are systematic flaws with the Knicks.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I do think though, especially when you compare Carmelo to Allen Iverson, there was never a time throughout Allen Iverson's, I want to say his heyday, that I questioned his effort.
Okay.
And that was the thing that Larry Brown could not. question his heart and his
effort.
That's fair. With Melo, that's my biggest problem.
That's fair. I can argue that.
Because even if Allen Iverson scoring all the points, his teammates, they grinded for him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Iverson made them dudes better. That's how good he was. Come on now, Eric Snow. Eric Snow, Aaron McKee. They weren't good at all.
No, I think they fed off of his energy. They fed off of his passion.
Kind of like Kobe Bryant, right? Carmelo just these things. Sometimes you just don't know if he's mentally there. And you mentioned his wife
and
that was part of the decision making with him going where he's going.
Yeah, so
his mind is not always on basketball.
So this is the thing. I don't necessarily agree with everything you said. The one point where you made about I don't necessarily know if his mind is there. Look, if he isn't concentrating, he can't go out there and score like 27 points a game. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fallacy right there. He's obviously on the offensive end, he's tuned in, he's focused. Now on the defensive end, totally different thing.
Yeah, I agree. Defensively, he doesn't. That's not his thing.
I agree. I think you know your point outweighs what I'm saying. I told you know because the Knicks are a mess. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the Thunder team, Billy Donovan. Look at what he's doing with that squad.
Russ, yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Russell Westbrook scored a lot of points. He did it every category. But did he make guys around him better this year? Probably not.
I don't think so.
Right.
Not necessarily,
but
no.
But you see they're in the playoffs. They're a sixth seed in a tough Western Conference.
Yeah.
The Knicks are a mess as an organization. And that's bigger than Carmelo. Unfortunately, he's the fall guy for it all the time, which I don't like either. But I'm saying I think Carmelo has been – I think people have taken him off the hook. When him and Phil share some responsibility, although ultimately, you know, Phil Jackson – made some mistakes in the way he went about things. And I think there's a level of arrogance on his part, which is why he feels like he can do that.
So one last point before – I know we need to wrap it up. But I think what people – no, I think the one thing that us as fans or outside observers, we kind of – where we place the blame on Carmelo is his attitude, right? We say he needs to be a leader. When people think of a leader, they think of someone that's fiery, get in your face, that essentially do the things like Paul George did, which is call people out. Mm-hmm. Carmelo isn't like that. He has a too cool for school attitude, which some people, it kind of takes people the wrong way if they say that he's the leader of this team. Mm-hmm. That's all. That's my last one.
So about the on Twitter, the question is, you know, do you think Phil Jackson was wrong? My man Joe said, yeah, he never said any of this to Melo's face. Now he's all chatty. So,
we don't know that.
I mean, either. We don't know that. We don't know that for sure.
But I mean, a lot of what I said is all based on speculation too, because deep down, I think Carmelo does work hard. I've seen some of his behind the scenes work, but
yeah, I mean,
it's just there are times where you question to me where you know his motivation is, where his effort.
Man,
I think that
comes back to his temperament and his attitude on the court. People say because he scores effortlessly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So people don't see the passion. That people don't see him fired up, screaming, yelling, having those emotional moments on the court. So people think he's not in tune with the game. Well, that necessarily may not be his personality.
I think he is a fiery guy when he needs to be. It's just to me. He doesn't seem bothered when he loses, and that's what it is.
So how do we don't necessarily know that?
I said seem.
He says seem,
but I'm just retorting. We don't necessarily know
Seem leaves a lot to
be desired.
Right.
I mean, we don't know how
appears.
He feels.
He doesn't appear to give a damn.
He doesn't outwardly appear. I think that's
on my expert analysis, I've been in NBA locker rooms. We see the Wizards after they lose. They like they care after that game. No, they don't. When you go to visit the locker room after the Wizards beat people, you see the difference. It's like, dang. Look at when I talked to Jeff Teague after they lost to the Wizards.
He was pissed.
He was angry. Sad, you go to Wizards locker room, they joking, they in the showers, laughing at each other. It's a big
because this is the huge problem I have with sports.
We can't talk about it.
That's the organization.
Yeah, we can't talk to Wizards.
No, see, this is the huge problem I have with us as fans, right?
Yeah, here you go.
If people aren't emotional, breaking stuff like Wally when his football team loses, punching holes in walls, then we think they don't give a damn. Everyone handles adversity differently.
I don't know what you're talking about, man.
Some people get disappointed. They're like, okay, on to the next one. I'm going to have to see the film the next day. So I'm not going to be.
I know Doc when I need him.
No, I mean, everyone's different. Everyone's different.
He said the Skins, they at a party. They at a club partying, man. While they losing. But we don't know their temperament. We don't know
about. Yeah, everyone handles disappointment differently. So that's why that's what that kind of. It is a long.
It's a long really, season, though. It's just, you know, this stuff is consistent. But I think I've dug myself in a deeper hole. Yeah. I don't think I helped my argument out.
Real ninjas do real things. I said ninjas. I said ninjas. I can say ninjas. Stone Cold. On that note, it's about time to wrap this show up.
Yeah, it is.
Will T, you want to say something to the people? You always have some
time. Oh, no. Once again, it's cool hanging out with you guys, talking sports. You know, thanks, Ed, for popping in at the beginning of the show, talking about hockey. That was a very in-depth analysis of the Capitals. And I got a couple of pictures of just how much Wally and Ray were enjoying hockey talk. These guys were excited. They were really excited.
Real ninjas do real things. Anyway, hey, you got anything you want to say, Ray Jeezy?
No.
That's cool. That sounds about right. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene
for ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.